This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Birrarung peoples, the traditional owners and custodians of this land. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge that genocide and colonisation are ongoing in Australia. This always was, and always will be, Aboriginal land.
Hello and welcome to Auspol Snack Pod, the podcast where we serve you up bite-sized chunks of Australian politics and news with a side of crispy memes. We're also the official podcast of the Auspol shitposting Facebook page. My name's Noon, aka I Know Funkenstein. I'm the admin of the shitposting page.
And I'm Zach Lesnack. I am a newly minted mod.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much for promoting me. I appreciate that. This week we've got a special guest chef cooking up some snacks for us. Shout-outs to George Columbaris for very kindly waiving his fee.
It was very generous.
For that this week. Noon, what did George whip up for you this week?
Well, he made me a Tim Tam Slam, but instead of the milk, he used a combination of blood, sweat, and tears from Queensland nickel workers.
That sounds fucking disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, what's disgusting is that Clive Palmer is a corrupt, thieving, multi-millionaire, capitalist pig.
True, and also, good segue.
Thanks. Yeah, so Clive Palmer has been in the news this week because he is in court. He's got a 9-week court hearing that's been basically on the books for the last couple of years since Queensland Nickel, which is a company that he owned, that collapsed, leaving a bunch of workers unpaid and a bunch of people who they owed money unpaid. And so this court case is between the people who he owes money and Clive. And it's about $200 million that he owes towards various people. 135 of that was basically stolen, right? So just before, like the weeks before Queensland Nickel went into liquidation, he signed a bunch of really dodgy contracts and gave away a bunch of money, some to his dad, some to a quote-unquote mystery woman from Kyrgyzstan. So I think we still don't know who that is or why she has money. He also bought, $135 million worth of shares in a company that his wife owned that was previously worth $2 and is now worth $135 million and $2. So this court case is basically the liquidators taking Clive to task for funneling a whole lot of money out of this business just before it collapsed.
Mm.
And he's representing himself, which is hilarious. So if anyone out there listening is about to go to court, let me suggest hire someone to represent you. Don't represent yourself. But Clive is extremely wealthy and is retaining lawyers. He just likes being in court. Well, that's what he says. He says it's a hobby to engage in litigation himself. So unlike such most people who represent themselves in court, he does have a legal team. But also, he has had some bad news. His key witness has declined to appear in court. So this was a guy who probably was going to lie through his teeth extensively to say that Clive had not acted as a director of a shadow director of the company and that he hadn't funneled money out. But this guy, whose name is Daneros, is basically being pursued by the Australian Tax Office for inappropriate conduct. And he's been given what's called an enforceable undertaking, which is basically like a command from the court that he gets someone to like look over all of his work and say whether or not he was doing dodgy, illegal shit.
Mm.
So anyway, he's like under a lot of professional and legal scrutiny from ASIC. Oh, it's ASIC, not the ATO who gave that, sorry. Has said that he's basically not going to appear in court to live for Clive. So Clive has produced another piece of extremely compelling evidence, which is a green notebook with handwritten entries in pencil that Clive says documents all of the agreements that he made to be involved in the company's running, and that proves that he's not a shadow director and all sorts of other things. So anyway, it's going to go on for another 9 weeks, this court case, and hopefully the drama will get even juicier and tastier. And I'm just going to keep drinking these Tim Tam slams until then. So what did George Columbaris make for you, Zach?
He just slapped down a full bottle of Aussie tomato sauce for me to chug.
He's really let it slip this week with his snacks, hasn't he?
Yeah, I'm not sure what he did to him to deserve this. Maybe he was making a reference to the fact that Blair Cottrell was in court again this week. If you don't know Blair, he's probably our primary... What's the word I'm looking for? He's probably our premier Nazi in Australia, I would say. Maybe after Fraser Anning, although where is he now? Who knows? Who cares? Blair was convicted in the Magistrates Court in Victoria in 2017 of racial vilification after staging a fake beheading in protest of a mosque that was being built in Bendigo. And he has been basically in court since then, appealing that decision, trying to get into higher and higher courts. He was in the news this week because he attempted to appeal to the Supreme Court of Victoria after being knocked back from appealing in the High Court of Australia. And, you know, keeps changing his justification for why he should be appealed. Oh, it's against the Australian Constitution, or it's against the Victorian Charter of Rights and Responsibilities, I think that's what it's called. And so anyway, he was knocked back from the Supreme Court. The Magistrates Court has said that, no, we're perfectly capable of handling this case here. You know, obviously he's just trying to get media for himself. I don't think that there's like a whole lot to this story. You know, it was just an appeal being denied for something this dude has already been convicted of. It is a funny example of the really sorry state of like political discourse in this country, I think. Aside from the fact that this dude is trying to stage like a war of ideas, free speech battle on this like time that he got a friend of his to cut off a paper mache head from like a store-bought dummy and then poured a bunch of like red paint on the ground while yelling Allahu Akbar. It's not exactly like, he's not a bastion of free speech. Let me put it that way.
I've often said that it's lucky for my friends that I don't live in America, because if I did, I would just be talking about the Bill of Rights all the fucking time. But in Australia, we don't have one. So I think it's funny that Blair Cottrell was like trying to get his free speech supported by the Australian Constitution, which does not have anything about that in it.
Yeah, it's almost like neo-Nazism is a global atomized ideology that doesn't have its root anywhere, and he's getting a lot of inspiration from America. Could be. Who knows? So on the one hand, it's important to like laugh at Blair and how ridiculous he is, because I think that's a good way to undermine Nazis, is to point out how fucking ridiculous they are and stupid. It is important also to take them seriously and recognize the very real harm that their ideology does, and Blair and the people that he associates with do physical harm to people on the regular. I don't know if you've seen him, he's big.
You might have remembered seeing him, I think, late last year when he harassed a street performer in Fed Square in Melbourne.
Yeah, and I think unsurprisingly, he's a raging homophobe and didn't approve of this busker performing in a leotard.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say that was the beginning of the end for Blair, really. I think that was a moment where a lot of public opinion turned against him when he, like, felt threatened by someone's non-traditional masculinity and went and found a bunch of mates to try and beat him up. And that also he was clearly doing like schoolyard bullying bullshit. And despite being approximately 6 times the size of that street performer, needed his buddies to like hold his hand while he yelled at him. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Nazis were being all chummy with the cops. That was a really cool episode, but you make a good point in the sense that his time in the national spotlight has basically come and gone. I think this story wasn't huge this week because Blair is kind of a nobody these days. He really had a moment in the sun maybe 2 years ago when he was first kind of on the rise and the term the alt-right was first starting to appear in the media sort of after Charlottesville, and you were starting to see these more respectable Nazis with good haircuts.
Richard Spencer and...
Yeah, Richard Spencer being a famous receiver of face punches doing this in the States. And Blair was kind of like our Australian equivalent of, boy, he's clean cut and well-spoken. And he started getting invited on ABC pretty regularly. He was on Hack on a panel about... I can't remember what it was. It was basically, you know, he was there to talk about, like, religious extremism, and they had him on a panel with a Muslim person, and this was just, you know, an example of extremely, not even just negligent, but actively harmful journalism from the ABC, and specifically in this case ABC2 and Triple J, who I think it was hacked that he appeared on. And just doing a little bit of backgrounding research for this, to chat about this today, I was just trawling through like ABC and 730's video archives, and there's just all these interviews where they just give these guys a platform to talk about how they're not racists and they're not Nazis, but they are white nationalists. And oh, that's a very important distinction to make. And I think that this is a problem that, even though Blair has kind of come and gone, this is a problem that the media still has all over the world. They really have no idea how to deal with the rise of this new neo-fascist movement. But even though Blair is kind of not really in the spotlight anymore, the media is still doing a terrible job of reporting on this stuff. So this week, while we had Blair kind of in the news for being knocked back because his legal claims are baloney, you have the ABC publishing this piece entitled "The Alt-Right Has Been Under the Media Spotlight, But Should We Be Concerned About the Alt-Left?" Which, if you read the article, the answer is no. Alt-left is a term invented by Donald Trump after Charlottesville in order to try and legitimize the alt-right.
Let me just interrupt you real quick. This is an unimportant point, but there's this idea called Betteridge's Law of Headlines, named after a media commentator, someone, Betteridge, who said that if a news headline is phrased as a yes-no question, the answer is no. And I think this headline is a great example, but should we be concerned about the alt-left? And I think the explanation for it is that if the answer is yes, then they would say something like, we need to be concerned about the alt-left, or like, I don't know, whatever else it is. So,
of course,
keep an eye out for question marks in headlines.
An excellent point, an excellent example of that law. So, yeah, if you read through this piece, as you say, the answer is very obviously no. And like, a good headline for this article might be, the term alt-left was invented by Donald Trump to legitimize fascists. That might be, that's closer to the truth that's in the article, but this headline just absolutely smacks to me of an editor being like, we need fairness, we need balancedness, the ABC needs to look like we're presenting both sides, and they sent it down the pipeline. Okay, here's the headline, somebody bring me the yarn. And then the reporter, whose name is Tasha Wabawa, and I don't want to like lay too much heat on her for this, but she like sounds like this assignment comes down the pipeline. She's like, oh, fucking hell, and writes out what is a, you know, pretty, like, let me just...
It's a fairly reasonable article talking about where the term alt-left comes from and who or what it might refer to, and kind of concludes that they're not really a thing.
Pretty much. And, yeah, presents that there was, like, you know, there's a 2018 study that debunked the theory that the term the alt-left is used to describe movements opposing the alt-right. It's a completely an invention of the alt-right trying to concoct an enemy for themselves to fight because they don't understand anti-fascists at all. One other thing that I did want to mention about this article that really shat me is that they quoted Richard Spencer, who we mentioned earlier, who claims to be an advocate of, quote, peaceful ethnic cleansing of all non-white Americans.
Whoa.
Yeah, I wouldn't love him to explain how you peacefully ethnically cleanse, because that's his whole deal. Oh, I'm nicer and smarter, better spoken than the other Nazis. And there's a very specific distinction between my version of ethnic cleansing, which is just about kicking everybody out of the country, which, by the way, does not constitute violence, and all the other Nazis who just want to punch people who don't look white.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I think his distinction is that he, at least publicly, says that he doesn't mind non-white people existing so long as they're not in his country, basically. So he thinks that ethnic nationalism is fine regardless of your ethnicity. Yeah.
Yeah, real cool perspective. Uh-huh. Cool to see him getting quoted as an expert in this excellent ABC article, which definitely doesn't need to exist, and which most people as like are going to read the headline, nothing else, and all they're going to take away from it is, oh, I know the term alt-left now. Anytime anybody brings up the term alt-right, I'll be able to say alt-left. ABC, congratulations for your extremely thoughtful, useful, and progressive contribution to this national conversation. You definitely aren't reinforcing and platforming white supremacy. And I will keep reading your articles.
just before we move on, I kind of want to say about the media's complete lack of capacity to respond appropriately to white nationalists and other fascist groups, that when Blair Cottrell was big, there was this parody group, the Million Flag Patriots, MFP, who...
Shout out MFP.
Yeah, who no longer exist, unfortunately. I think they might have got, like, gently called in by some Aboriginal people who thought that maybe their approach wasn't great. I'm not 100% sure about that. Anyway.
That would be fair.
But there, I think it was Channel 9, repeatedly showed footage of the Million Flag Patriots with their triple flag and yelling, standing outside the front of a courthouse, complaining about Blair Cottrell and others being quarter patriots, not being real patriots. And Channel 9 like, oh, here are some supporters of the United Patriots Front. Which is hilarious, but also just goes to show that the media don't know what the difference between a real dangerous fascist is and people play acting as dumb fascists. They just have no capacity.
Or people play acting as, like, politically genuine people who have nuanced opinions that should be being broadcast on Four Corners. Thanks for that Steve Bannon interview last year. Another great contribution.
100%.
It's bad, you guys. We should talk more about fascism on this podcast, I think, because it's really interesting, and it's not something that I think that there is any kind of productive mainstream media conversation happening about for the most part in this country, but also in the US and globally speaking. And we, as the nation who produced the person who carried out the Christchurch attack, have a responsibility to actively root this stuff out. So, yeah, stay tuned for more fash bashing. Theoretical.
yeah, we're both pretty weedy dudes, but verbal bashing.
We don't physically fight people.
We just want to talk about the moon now. So this week was the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, and everyone's been talking about it.
Oh, fuck, is that why it's been in the news? Okay.
Yeah.
I just thought it was like a blood moon this week, and all the media was like, ah, slow news week.
No. Anniversary of the moon landing.
Are you glad you come here for your analysis?
We're extremely well informed about a variety of things. But anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about Indigenous astronomy in Australia, or the knowledge that the First Nations people had before colonial arrival.
Yep. Just before we get into that, I wanted to acknowledge that last week we spoke about constitutional recognition of Indigenous people for a while, and I used the term Indigenous Australians a lot. And it is a term that gets used a lot by mainstream media when talking about this stuff. But it's not an accurate term, and I don't want to use it, and I'm sorry that I did. I think the term First Nations people or Indigenous people is much more accurate because, according to a lot of Indigenous people, Australia is an illegitimate state and basically doesn't exist. And to say that they are part of it is to basically remove their or erase their sovereignty. So just a little mea culpa on that, and that's all.
You also were going to maybe read a tweet from Nayuka Gori about this?
Oh yeah, that's right, yeah. When I was talking about this to Noon earlier, it reminded me of a tweet from Nayuka Gori, who's an Indigenous writer from Nam, who said, who tweeted last week, first Australians would be the dead white cunts from 1901, which I think is a good summary of the same issue. Sorry, Noon, go on. You were going to tell us about Indigenous astronomy.
Yeah, totally. So there has been fairly recently an Indigenous site found somewhere in Victoria, it's a location is secret, that is basically an observatory that would allow people to observe changes in where the sun rises and falls, which is super cool. And it was like an actual, sort of like Stonehenge, people are saying a similar thing that kind of is a combination calendar and observatory.
Neat.
So that's super cool. And according to an article by Crystal Di Napoli, who's an astrophysicist at Monash, there were several major discoveries that, or knowledge that First Nations people had before colonial arrival, which was that the Earth is round, which is pretty incredible given that that was like something that in the West wasn't really acknowledged for until a couple hundred years ago.
A long time, yeah.
Yep. That they knew about supernova, so the stars that explode at the end of their life, and that their songs and stories have recorded them as long ago as 2,000 years.
Wow.
Which is probably about basically when early ancient Greek astronomy was first noticing supernova.
Right, right.
They also knew about planets and about their movements, and that sort of might not seem super impressive to a modern audience, but to be able to distinguish between the planets
rotation
that move separately from the stars and understand they have different relationship with the Earth than the sort of field of stars of the Milky Way and so on is quite an advanced astronomical discovery. Anyway, I'm sure there are a huge amount of indigenous astronomy knowledge that I haven't heard about, and there's a really good Facebook page that I'll link in the comments to this episode that you can follow about indigenous astronomy. A lot of good stories and other names for constellations that we have, you know, white names for. Yeah, just think it's super cool. And in this week where we're busy talking about like an American act of like interplanetary colonial expansion onto the moon, it's worth acknowledging that Aboriginal people, First Nations people also had advanced scientific knowledge about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really nice to see a little bit more public discussion happening about this kind of knowledge that Indigenous people had, to kind of combat these assumptions or these racist narratives that are put forward by colonial Australia, saying that they were purely hunter-gatherer societies. You know, Bruce Pascoe's book, Dark Emu, does an amazing job of complicating and correcting those narratives. And I think that this is another great piece of that puzzle and really showing us of what an amazing, complex and beautiful civilization existed here for over 80,000 years.
Just also, a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned Budj Bim, which was an indigenous site that's recently been given UNESCO World Heritage listing, which was a eel farm sort of aquaculture structure. And we've been thinking that we might go do a little snack pod excursion there sometime. And I just wanted to bring that up again because I think it's super cool and I'm excited for whenever we get to go see it.
Yeah, neat. Maybe we'll come to you from the field one day and bring you even worse audio. Cool. Now it's time for
Shitpost of the Week.
Shitposters have been pretty active this week.
We had a lot of good options, and unfortunately we can't give the title to all of them.
No, we could. We could do whatever we want.
It's
our podcast, but we're not going to. I wanted to shout out one of my favorite runners-up, which is a meme from Aiden Crocker on the Ozball Shitposting Facebook page, which is the Water Drop Emoji Twitter Starter Pack. If you're not on Ozball Twitter, congratulations. It is extremely bad for your mental health. But I am. And there are these boomers who put a water drop emoji in their
Twitter handle
to basically complain about the Murray-Darling water controversy. Basically, you've got a lot of like middle-aged and upper middle-aged labor hacks with this water drop in their name. And this starter pack includes such things as a headshot of Alex Turnbull, everybody's favorite
progressive
liberal,
conservative.
Yeah, progressive conservative poster boy. Hashtag I like Bill Shorten. A little picture of Voldemort there. A picture of a can of Hawks Lager. Van Badham. Paul Keating. And a great little meme of that says, I fight Tories. That's what I do.
And there's also Rupert Murdoch crossed out.
Yeah, Rupert is bad. I mean, bad Rupert.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true. And indicative of the extremely, extremely sophisticated political discourse that goes on amongst the 60-plus-year-old white people of this country. So thanks for that excellent starter pack meme, Aiden. We're not going to give it to you this week, but keep up the shit posting.
Another runner-up is from Twitter Harmon Ryan, and was shared into the group by Matthew Zamari, Vito Zamari. And it's a screenshot from The Simpsons, the one where Sideshow Bob is stepping on the rakes and he goes, But in this one, Sideshow Bob is Elbow's leadership and the rakes on the ground are labelled bad policy, poor strategy, wrong lessons, strange tactics, weak messaging, weird civility stuff, soft opposition.
Weird civility stuff is spread over two
over
rakes.
Over two rakes, yeah.
I just liked it. Bring attention to that. Yep, quality Simpsons shitposting, but not taking out the top spot this week.
No. We're a little reluctant to give it to non-original content. I'm not saying that's a hard and fast rule, but the OC is really what we're trying to promote.
We love OC.
Shitpost of the week. So another non-OC one was from Alex Hartman, which was a screenshot of a tweet from Michael Kozoil.
My favorite format of contribution to the page, by the way. All I ever do is screenshot tweets and post them to Oz Bullshit Posting. So, you know when I said stay off Twitter? I mean that because that's where I get all my content.
Yeah, and don't read the age as well because all my content is just photos of that. Anyway, this tweet from Michael Koziol reads like this. Tony Abbott, when asked by Alan Jones this morning about the prospect of wind turbines in his former seat of Warringah, "The last thing we want is what I regard as the dark satanic mills of the modern era spoiling our landscape."
Hashtag Ozpol.
Hashtag Ozpol. Dark satanic mills, bring them on, that's what I say.
Again, conservatives making stuff that we want sound so much cooler than it is.
It's true.
But also, not taking out the top spot this week. Now, we did have a meme posted, which is, you know, it's definitely OC, so we're into it. It's a Photoshop of George Christensen with his famous whip. He's photoshopped in a very lush-looking bedroom with a woman in an Australian flag one-piece saying, "Fill me with Aussie pride, harder daddy." And the caption says, "Hurt me, fascist daddy." Now, this is OC. It's technically Ozpol content, but it's also extremely disturbing, and we don't think that we like it. Now, Kira, thank you for the meme. We appreciate your contributions, and
everyone should go check out Kira's many and varied meme pages, which we will link in the comments.
Kira does excellent work. I just think that this made me a little bit too upset for me to want to give it a prize, but I do want to give a prize to a photo comment on the meme. I think we have a winner for Shitpost of the Week this week.
I agree.
You want to tell us what we got?
Yeah, so this is from Zoe Zarzicki, who I hope I'm saying her name right. Hey, Zoe.
Definitely getting it wrong. Sorry, Zoe.
Which is a picture of George Christensen standing with his palms together, his head angled slightly, and it says, "You know, I had to do it to him." Which, of course, I'm sure many of you know the meme of the guy standing there saying, "You know, I had to do it to him." But this picture of George Christensen is just, like, the perfect angle and body
language. I don't know what you found there, Zoe, and I am worried for you that you saw this and clearly screen-capped it, knowing that one day you'll be able to deploy it as a reference to the "Had to Do It to a Meme." But I'm glad that you did. I'm glad that you brought it into our lives. excellent job. Congratulations on Shitpost of the Week. Sorry, everybody else who shitposted but didn't make the cut. Keep shit posted away. You never know what might happen next week. You can't know.
Next up, we've got...
"It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey!"
We've been experimenting with this segment. You know, sometimes we give it to the best take.
Sometimes we give it to the blurst take.
This time, I want to give both best and blurst take to Barnaby Joyce.
And oh, shit.
He actually
Dark
has
horse.
1.5... best takes and sort of one extremely large blurst take. So it's kind of like two on either side. So let me explain. Let's start from the beginning. The first best take is about constitutional recognition. So we talked last time about the whole third chamber of parliament bullshit, that conservatives are trying to say that constitutional recognition of Indigenous Australians might constitute a third chamber of parliament, so the House...
If enshrining an Indigenous voice to parliament.
The voice to parliament, specifically. Yeah. So that they are worried that there would be the House, the Senate, and the Indigenous body, and as we said last time, that's obviously bullshit. It's a lie that they're telling to avoid having to make this kind of change.
Mm-hmm.
And Barnaby Joyce was one of the people who made that dumb lie. And this week, on an interview with Patricia Karvelis, he said he, quote, "apologises unreservedly for misleading people about saying that it was a third voice. He said that several people have explained to him over a long time that that's not what is being advocated for, and he apologized for misrepresenting it.
Yeah, and that's the headline that you'll see going around on The Guardian and on the ABC and elsewhere. Barnaby Joyce apologizes for calling Indigenous voice the Chamber of Parliament. I'm going to be honest with you, Noon. It fucking pisses me off. That's the headline.
Uh-huh.
Because if you actually read his comments... I mean, firstly, if you watch the interview, he apologizes pretty reluctantly.
He does.
Only once beaten into a corner by PK, who's like, it's very obvious that what you said was wrong, inflammatory, and fucked up. Do you admit that? And you know, normally I would expect him to have, like, yelled back and spoken over her. And to his credit, he did not and reacted like a slightly reasonable human being. He did apologize, if reluctantly, but if you actually read what he says, he then goes on to say that taking constitutional recognition to a referendum is a bad idea. Now, we can debate whether or not that's true. His motivation for saying that, on the other hand, I don't think is that debatable.
I'd hate to be...
You're going to split hairs on me on this shit.
Yeah.
Go on.
He said, taking it to a referendum that won't succeed is a bad idea.
Right. Yeah, we can only take to a referendum... a nothing bullshit proposition that we'll get past.
Yep.
Sorry, I should have clarified
that. You should
have. That is 100% my bad.
Thank you for apologizing for misrepresenting Barnaby Joyce. You should write a fucking headline about that.
To get this fucking segment back on track, if you read through what he actually said, he said that regional senators is something that will give vastly greater Indigenous representation, and even if they're not Indigenous, they have to be very aware of the Indigenous issues, and we could do it by an act of Parliament. So what he said is, give my constituents more representation. Indigenous people don't need more representation.
I'm really impressed that he managed to make an issue about Indigenous, like, voice to Parliament about more non-Indigenous people in Parliament. I think that was an impressive... piece of...
It's like the Michael
bullshit.
Jordan of being a racist.
That's true.
Just when you think it's taken it to the limit.
3-point.
Oh, shit.
Swish.
Boom shakalaka. So that is the first of Barnaby's best takes,
yeah.
Which I've now... I feel like I've reduced that to at least a medium, if not a bad take.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Going into this, I was aware that this was not
I
a particularly
I going to
take. Yeah.
Yell at him about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So...
go on.
Fuck you, Barnaby. Good one for... slightly backpedaling on one tiny piece of your bullshit.
That makes you better than the Prime Minister.
So, the other one that also makes him better than the Prime Minister and better than opposition leader Anthony Albanese is that Barnaby Joyce this week called for an increase to the New Start payment, which is clearly a good idea for looking after the most vulnerable people in our society. And I think it's an interesting example of what people often say about the Nationals being agrarian socialists, as in they want government spending on what about the farmers. And yeah, I don't think that's necessarily an accurate representation of what they are. There's that meme that's like a Karl Marx quote that says, when government does stuff, it's socialism, and the more they do, the socialister it is. I think that that is a... yeah, to call them
agrarian socialists.
A really
good and nuanced take, yeah.
But,
which memes always are.
Exactly, that's very true. But Barnaby did call for an increase in New Start, and he called for a raise above indexation. So anyway, good one, Barnaby, calling for like some slightly progressive reform that's going to be good for the economy, good for the poor, and I'm just impressed that he's gotten there ahead of the Labour Party.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Labour has been talking about it a little bit more this week, and there has been, I can't remember the MP's name, but there have been a couple of Labour MPs explicitly calling for it.
Yeah.
And the party's position in general has kind of softened on it a little bit. And I would also like to just kind of add a caveat to Barnaby speaking out about it, which was that he specifically was like, it's tough for people in regional areas to go to job interviews if they're really far away. New Start payments should be higher for them because they have a further distance to travel. He then went on to say, but I understand that in CBD areas that rents are higher, so they should probably have a new start as well. So I think he kind of started off trying to make it a regional issue and then realized that he had to say this other thing in order to balance it out, and then accidentally kind of ended up in a place where he was just like advocating for the whole thing. But, you know, if you want to give him the credit for it, I'm not going to stop you, Noon.
Yeah. Well, look, so those are the two possible best takes, and I think that both of them are just like knocked out of the park by the badness of this blurst take that I'm about to read. Well, I'm not going to read the whole thing because this is very long post, as blurred posts often are.
Mm, so, yeah.
Look, I gotta admit, this is technically not from this week, it's from last week, it's from the 10th of July, but I only saw it the other day, and I'm just really amazed at how good this bad take is. So it starts off like this. The very idea that we can stop climate change is barking mad.
Cool. Fucking strong start.
Yeah. So this is a long screed about how we're going to wish we had global warming when the Ice Age comes. And I'll just read you a few little... I'm just going to glance my over and read you a few key sentences.
Please make
One of the few graces of being on the backbench is you can be honest with what your views really are.
Oh, great, yeah. Barney's been, like, massively censoring himself in the public eye for all time, as we all know.
Politics takes politics to the absurd. That's fucking deep, man. You don't get the feeling when you listen to the political propaganda or the supporting lobbyists that there's any doubt about their capacity to fix the climate problem. I do get the feeling that you'll be tried for heresy if you dare question the zeitgeist, so you basically have to lie about your honest assessment of what the hell we're doing to our economy, standard of living, our basic rights, and the real future of our children. That was all one sentence. It just goes on and on. And look, he is technically correct that the Earth is in a long-term cooling period at the moment. Our human-induced global warming over the last couple hundred years is a very big reversal of a trend towards a global cooling and potentially an ice age. So he's not wrong about that. However, it's very likely that our global warming is going to basically be more extreme than the cooling process has gone on. But regardless, he's clearly a shit brick and is a bad take.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that all of those takes were ultimately kind of blurred. Cool. I mean, look, the newest one wasn't so bad.
So I guess Barnaby Joyce gets three, two and a half, one and a half blessed takes.
Mm, and we don't need to talk about him again for a while, hopefully. Yeah. So look forward to that. It is outrageous how much fucking press he gets from a backbencher, but anyway. Now it's time for what is fast becoming my favorite segment.
Who fucked up?
Who fucked up this week? I'll tell you who fucked up. The Beeraputs. To be specific, Fanny Aelida Beeraput and her brother, Rambertus Cornelius Beeraput.
Those are phenomenal names. That's like some Albus.
Do you want to say them? I feel like I stole it. You know, I feel like I should have shared it around.
Fanny Aelida Beeraput and Rambertus Cornelius Beeraput. Yeah, cool. Yeah, it was satisfying.
Nice. Yeah, it's definitely fun. I encourage you to try it at home.
Beeraput.
This, brother and sister from Tasmania have been ordered to pay more than $2 million to the ATO after saying that they refused to pay tax because, again, it went against the word of God. Unsurprisingly, the court has been like, disagree, and has ordered them to pay, over $1 million each in back taxes and other assorted fees. That's a pretty big fuck-up.
It's pretty... $2 million, that's... I don't think I could fuck up that hard if I tried.
That's what, you know, if you're, like, getting charged $930,000 in income tax, like, I don't think we need to feel sorry for these people.
No, definitely not. But also, did they not hire a fucking lawyer?
No, they represented themselves.
Fuck, a lawyer's also
which is
the word of God?
A real indicator of a good comedy news story, I think. When someone is self-representing.
You started with Clive, ended with the Beeraputs.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously I think it's fucked up that the legal system is completely inaccessible to anybody who hasn't done, like, decades worth of extremely expensive legal training. But also, again, don't feel sorry for the Beeraputs. And one fucking detail that I love about this story is that you don't have to do very much digging at all to find out that this is something they've been doing for ages, and they keep just, like, not paying rates on properties that they own and shit like that, because they're like, no, God owns the land, so we can't pay you tax on it. And they've had stuff like the local council has seized one of their properties and auctioned it in order to, like, pay off the debts that they owe them. And it's kind of funny in that case, the council like took the money that was owed them that they got from the profits from auctioning one of their properties and then gave them back the rest of the
change,
the money, basically. And the Biraputs gave it back to them again in cash. We're like, we can't accept this. This is money that was made from selling God's land, so the money belongs to God. So, I mean, they did kind of...
consistent, if not...
They're definitely consistent, but also the money that they gave back amounted to, like, less than $200,000, and they have been avoiding paying, you know, literal millions.
10 times that, yeah.
So, again, don't feel sorry for the Biraputs.
This isn't a theology podcast, unfortunately. Theology, or Bible story, is probably third on my list of podcasts to make... just after the Marxist propaganda one. But there's, you know, that really famous story about, you know, Jesus saying, give unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, which is like a story about, like, that not focusing on the material wealth and about letting literally a taxpayer take the money for tax for Caesar.
I think you could reasonably call it one of the Bible's greatest hits.
Yeah. Yeah, top 10 material, definitely. Anyway, the Biraputs maybe should reread that bit. Also...
But the judge literally quoted them that.
Oh, that's hilarious. Good on him.
yeah, because... Look, I think we spent enough time on the Biraputs. What were we going to say?
It's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a wealthy man to enter heaven. That's it. Yeah.
Mm. Yes, but you see, they're not wealthy. They just have God's wealth.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so I see we're getting confused there. Okay, this has been a long one. Maybe I'll cut it down. Maybe I won't. Noon won't do either. Because
that's true.
He doesn't do the editing. But we wanted to round off this week with our fresh segment,
Potluck. Where you bring the snacks.
yeah, I have to make a sting for that. Maybe I'll add some, like, sounds of, like, knives and forks against plates behind you saying that. Mm. Say it again.
Potluck, where you bring the snacks.
Yeah, good one. So... Yeah, this is where we ask people to send in a little bit of audio of themselves doing something related to Australian politics. We don't really mind what it is, if it's a song or if it's you complaining about something. It's all good. This week we have an anonymous submission.
From a mystery listener.
Well, it's a mystery to you. We know who it is.
So there's a whole narrative in the media around John Setka being bullied by the Liberal Party and how they're super against him because he's like a union man and, you know, pays his workers and stuff. I mean, yeah. Okay, so Liberals hate unions. Cool. And yes, they're using the fact that he's a violent misogynist against him, which is okay. Sure. But let's not pretend that, like, the Liberals like women. You know, like, we know why they're doing and saying what they're saying. But the fact that Setka supporters and unionists and Labor members and things like that are actually using that to defend Setka is deeply, deeply concerning. I'm also very concerned about women who are in his union. Well, not his union, he's the secretary. But, like, how can you, as a woman who has experienced violent assault at work, go to your union with a complaint about said assault when the secretary is just like, yeah, that's totally cool? That's not a reason for dismissal. That's, you know, that's the thing that we do. Like, what the fuck? Setka needs to go, or Setka needs to actually engage in a conversation around his problematic behaviour. The issue with Setka stepping down is that he's likely to be replaced with another man with a similar mindset, but maybe won't have a chat about it at a meeting. You know, the whole MRA, oh, Rosie Batty, I don't have rights now to, like, to talk about how I abuse women and I can't get away with it anymore because Rosie Batty. Like, really, friend? No. So, yeah, Setka either needs to address his issues and, like, work on them and, like, be open with the community about why he fucked up, how he fucked up, and what he's going to do to change his behaviour, or we need to replace him with a woman and that's it.
John Setka, retire.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here.
Boo!
Well,
okay.
That's us for this week. Thank you for listening. Please rate and review us. We're on iTunes now. We're on Google Podcasts. We're on Stitcher. We're on everything. So you should be able to get us wherever, whatever app you're on.
It took a really, really long time to get all of that stuff, you guys. So, like, I've been working on it for a month. If you have Google Podcasts, Oh my god, the process of going through it was so annoying. Anyway, we're there now. Do please rate and review us on iTunes.
We are led to believe that it will help
our audience. We have no idea we have literally no other ideas for how to possibly promote this. I guess if you like it, like...
Share it. Cut pieces on your timeline. Invite them to Ozball shitposting.
Yeah, and please send us in clips as well. Yeah. Be a part of the show.
Just email it in. Our email is ozpolsnackpod@gmail.com.
Join the Facebook page if you're not there already, Ozpol Shitposting. You can follow the show on Twitter, where we do not tweet, but I promise that we will start soon, @ozpolsnackpod.
That's it. Cool. Have a good week.
Keep on snacking in the free world. Is that working yet?
Yeah, it's fine. I'm in for it. I don't think I need to sign off.